Welcome to the RA Podcast, the official Retro Achievement Podcast. I am Draco655, joined by my friend Shootzy and Bendy Human. What's up, guys?
Welcome back to the podcast, everybody. Hope you're doing good.
Hey, Draco. Hey, Shoot. We've got a good one for you guys today. I'm looking forward to it.
We have also a very special guest with us today. He is one of the top players on Retro Achievement, currently sitting into the number 7 on the leaderboard. Please welcome to the podcast, Veritasu!
Thank you very much for having me on this podcast. I've been looking forward to it, and I'm very eager to take part.
Thank you for agreeing on to be on the podcast. We are so happy to have you here. For today's episode, we will be asking a series of questions to get to know you better. Let's get things started by focusing on your retro achievement journey. So for the first segment, I will be with you on that one. So we're going to talk about retro achievement and your kind of like your history there. So my first question, we always like to start off by asking your questions, because it seems like everyone has an interesting story. How did you discover retro achievement?
Well, I remember actually how I discovered it. I happened to come across the stream of Nico, who was known as the Wii guy at the time. I noticed that he was playing an old retro game on the NES, and that whenever he was getting achievements popping up, and that piqued my curiosity, because it seemed like, okay, how are you doing that? What is this going on? So he dropped me a link to the website, and I looked around, and I'm like, oh wow, you mean I can play these games that I play a lot anyway, and get little achievements for doing it, and also new challenges to games that I've been playing for years and years. And I jumped in with both feet and have not looked back since.
It's always fun to see like one of your friend playing something and you like never see before, and you just like come across and play that. That's very cool. What is the appeal of retro achievement for you?
Well, it is, a part of it is the very primal reward-based appeal of it, in terms of, you know, getting that little achievement to pop up and seeing your score go up. But for me, part of that is the fact that it pushes me to try games that I might not otherwise dip my feet into, or to play games that I'm very familiar with, but in ways I've never done it before. Games that I may be able to beat, you know, using certain strategies and certain techniques, but then have a challenge to beat it with these limitations or with these specific means of doing it. Sometimes things I would never think about, and sometimes things I never knew existed. I just recently discovered that you can throw mushroom blocks on top of some of the clouds in Super Mario Brothers 2. I've had that game since 1989, and I never knew that. So that's part of the joy of doing this is experiencing, in a way, old games in entirely new ways and making them fresh again. And to me, that's very exciting.
I totally agree on your answer there. That was pretty much the same stuff as me when I play SNBH with the white mushrooms. I never know they're existing into that game. So a question I'm very interested about is, you're currently like ranked 7 on retro achievement. What has that journey been like for you?
Well, it's been an exciting journey. I never expected to get this high in the leaderboards when I started. I was just doing it just because I really enjoyed playing. It's been rewarding to me. I mean, to be perfectly honest, it is rewarding to see your rank go up and go, oh man, I'm getting to be one of the better people at this. And there is that certain pride that comes with it, but it's also the thrill of the competition, vying amongst like-minded people, to climb, you're whenever that you would get to close to a rank that somebody else occupies, especially if they're an active player, there's that exciting jostling for position where you've got to, kind of push past and try to become better in your own skills to move further and further up. And to me, that has been an absolute thrill. Granted, these days I'm not quite pushing as far and as hard as I was when I was climbing up, but that's been my experience with it.
That's very interesting, and both of us share the same experience to like pushing, keep pushing until we reach the very tops. I know like the top 10 is very like competitive, high competitive. Do you feel any pressure to maintain your site rank?
I kind of do. When you achieve something that's significant, you kind of want to try to keep it because it's a feather in your cap. I know that I'm not going to be able to stay up here forever, just because there are so many people who are hungry and eager for it and just pushing themselves constantly to achieve it. I know eventually I'll get pushed out of the top 10, but I do want to try to delay that to a degree. And I do have one other goal that I would like to get. I'm not certain I ever will get it unless I really redouble my efforts, and that is to get to the top 5. But I'd like to get there. So there's that kind of pressure to try to just push, give it one last final push so I can for at least a brief moment be in the top 5. But I don't know. Ultimately, I know there is going to be someone who is better. There is going to be someone who's hungrier than me to get that ranking. And I'm okay with that. I accept that. But at the same time, I want to delay it.
But to be honest, I wish you the best of luck to keep your goals reaching for the top 5. I'm sure you can. I wish you the best luck on that one. Do you have any advice for people who want to climb the ladders and and compete with the top players on Retro Human?
Well, I only have my own experience to draw from. And my advice would be based on that. Play games that interest you and play a variety of games. My ratio was not as high as many of the people at the top because I don't necessarily focus on an individual game and try to master it all the way and then move on to the next one. I tend to spread my gaming out very widely. Part of that is because I do other projects that involve playing these games, but so I'll get, for instance, I may be just playing a Mega Man game just because I'm playing a Mega Man game without specifically going for achievements. But, I'll play it in Retro Achievements, and I may get a couple of achievements in the process. Maybe I'll manage to accomplish something I didn't know I could do. So just just keep at it. Keep plugging at it. When you have an opportunity, keep plugging at it, you know, and take breaks when you need to. The main thing is you've got to do it because you find it fun. If you find that it's not fun, you lose all your momentum. You lose all your desire to continue to do it, and you'll burn out. So just keep plugging away at it. One of the good things is when you're just starting out, you see a lot of very, very rapid rising through the ranks, because at the very bottom, you can quickly shoot up to the top. It doesn't take too long to get to the top 500. And then from there, it takes more determination, but you can get to the top 100. And then from there, it's just keep pushing, keep pushing, keep pushing. You know, if there's a, and I know for myself, there are some, there are some games where I'm like, I don't think I'm going to master this. So I step away from that and move on to something else and start plugging away at that one. You know, that's how I did it. Other people, you know, they take different approaches, but that's my advice.
I mean, that's a pretty good advice, to be honest. Keep having fun is always the best, and keep pushing. I know you mentioned a little bit about that one, but just to make sure, what is your goals on RA?
Well, the main goal I have left, apart from just stay as high as I can for as long as I can, would be to get to the top five. I'm not certain because I'm no longer spending as much time and as much energy on RA as I was whenever I was climbing. I don't know if I'll ever be able to push past, because the people who are at the top are constantly plugging away at this. And without putting a lot more focus and determination into it, I'm not certain I'd get there, but to get to the top five would be very nice. And that's pretty much it. And master more games. That's kind of what I'm doing right now, is focusing on going back to games that I may have gotten some achievements on, and go try to clean up and in some cases master them.
Pretty nice. I wish you the best luck again for your getting your future master on those. You speak a little bit about that, but how do you decide what game to play on RA?
It's kind of just whatever strikes my fancy at that time. If it's a game that I'm familiar with, I'm going to lean towards that. Or if it's in a genre that I particularly enjoy, that'll lean me towards that. But it's just kind of whatever piques my interest. There's new games being added all the time, so I check back to see, has some game that I, you know, really like, has it been added yet? You know, have they added the DS version of Dragon Quest IV yet, for instance? If they have, then I might, you know, start working on that. You know, it's just whatever piques my interest, and it can be completely random, to be perfectly honest.
Interesting. So another good question here is, what are some of your favorite set that you have played on RA?
That is a challenging question. I've played a lot of games that I really enjoyed. As far as favorite set, I think The Legend of Zelda was a particularly enjoyable one because of how many different ways I had to play it, how many specific challenges that it had inside of it beyond just, you know, getting through the game. That variety of challenge was pretty fun, and it made for an enjoyable, I think I spent focused on trying to master it about 4 days. And that was a really enjoyable about 4 days or so, because I think I had to play through it 3 or 4 times to actually get all of them. Some of the Super Mario Brothers 2 had an interesting set of achievements. One I just mastered this morning, the Goonies had some fun achievements, which that's just a fun game in general. Castlevania, I think, was another one that I really enjoyed because, again, I learned a lot more about the game because of some of the hidden, because in that one there's achievements about getting the hidden treasures, and I knew where like three or four of them were, but over the course of playing that I had to research and find out, okay, here's where all these other ones are that I never knew were hidden in the first place. So that was fun. And also the Ninja Gaiden one, which was also very, very difficult, but again, it gave me a lot of very interesting challenges to try at, and to me that's always exciting whenever it's creative challenges that don't feel unfair. Those are some of the most exciting and interesting ones for me.
Very interesting. Speaking of challenge and hard achievement, what are some of the greatest challenge that you have overcome in your retro achievement journey? Any particularly hard achievement or achievement set that stand out?
Yeah, I can think of some that took a lot of effort. The Silver Surfer achievements, because that game itself is very difficult. That set was very challenging to do. And very rewarding whenever that I actually accomplished it. The Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles for the NES one, also very challenging, especially since it required me to play through. I think there was one, I'm going off of my memory, I think there was one to play through the game without using Donatello, who is pretty much the main turtle I play as. So that was challenging. The Ninja Gaiden one, as I mentioned before, because part of that was beating all of the bosses without taking damage. And for those who are familiar with it, there's at least one boss that you pretty much have to get to them with a specific special weapon in order to kill them without taking damage. And the nature of the way the game is built, you basically have one shot per time you play the game to do that, because if you fail, then you have to reset to even try again. One of the ones I did very recently, Friday the 13th, was very, very challenging. But like with Castlevania, it required me to learn very in depth about the game, about its mechanics, about its structure, and about the way that it is built. And that was incredibly exciting and very, very challenging. I was ecstatic whenever that I actually managed to master that one, because the hardest one to get is defeat Jason without losing any counselors or any children. So basically you have to play it more or less perfect. Those are probably the hardest ones that immediately spring to mind. There are some other ones that were also pretty challenging and pretty hard. But those are the main ones that spring to mind when I think of ones that were very, very difficult and really pushed me to achieve them.
Very nice. Are there any type of those achievements that you personally like, and any that you personally dislike?
I'm sorry, can you repeat the question? I didn't quite catch that.
Yes, sir. So do you have like some achievement which do you like to do, and some is like what you like to do, some on the achievement, and what you don't like to do?
Achievements that I like to do. From a kind of a easygoing standpoint, I kind of like the achievements where it's basically get through the game. Although those don't really push and aren't as memorable as a result. I think some of my favorite types are the ones that basically push you to be creative. Examples of that. One example of that would be one that I was working on a couple of weeks ago for Ghosts and Goblins. One of the achievements that I got was to get through or get to the boss of the second stage without ever firing your weapon. That involved being very, very creative in how I went about playing that stage, and was exciting as all get out whenever that actually accomplished it. And to me, that's some of the most exciting and most interesting types of achievements for me are the ones where I'm playing it differently than I normally would. That of course it can go too far and it can feel just unfair, but a lot of times I've not experienced that. Most of the times it's like it pushes you and it forces you to be very, very clever in how you do it, but it is perfectly doable if you can learn basically the game, not just how to play the game, but how the game works. Those are some of the most fascinating and most fun to me. I'm not a fan of sets that are more or less joke sets. I may have deleted the achievements from my record on it, but I know I did wind up getting the set for Solar Jetman, which was made as a joke because you basically get all of the achievements in the first 5 seconds of the game. I'm not a fan of those. And I deleted that record because it's like that doesn't count. I'm not a fan of those. I'm not a huge fan of playing an entire game perfect, because I'm not as big a fan of play through this entire game without ever getting hit. Mostly because it's such a big bite that it just feels like it's too much to do at one time. Now, if it was beat a stage without taking damage, it would be a little bit more bite-sized, but where it's the entire thing, yes, it's a very big challenge, but it's a little much in my opinion, for me at least. So those are probably the ones I'm least favorite of.
That's very fantastic. I mean, that's a very good answer there. And I really like, as well, like you, Lee, when a developer makes something like very creative and unique way to play games you just enjoy to play. How has achievement hunting changed the way in which you approach games?
Well, it certainly made me more likely to play a game if it's got achievements. That's an obvious answer. I feel it has kind of freed me up to... It's kind of broken me a little bit out of a mold of playing a game a set way, because the way I work is usually if I find a strategy that works, I'll just do that strategy over and over and over and over ad infinitum. But retro achievements, because there are so many achievements that involve playing games in unexpected ways or in new ways or using different strategies, it's helped me to become a little bit more loose and flexible in terms of how I approach games, to where that I'm not just stuck in a rut necessarily. These days, if I play Super Mario Brothers 2, I'll probably go through the entire game as Luigi, but I might not. I might play as Toad or as Mario, or maybe just cycle through them. Whereas before, it was pretty much it's Luigi or nothing. So I think that is one of the ways it has changed the way that I approach games in terms of just being being more flexible and being more open to trying new things.
That's a very good answer, Dave. So my next question is, are there any game that you would like to see added on Ori?
Yes, there are a couple of ones. One is, I would like to see a proper set for Solar Jetman. That is a very solid game. It's a very fun game, and it deserves to have a robust and proper set. I'd kind of like to see this is kind of reaching a bit, but the NES unlicensed title Spiritual Warfare from Wisdom Tree, because it's one of the only Wisdom Tree games that I can legitimately tell any person, this is actually a good game, because it is a ripoff of Zelda. It's like, okay. And as a result, the game itself is actually fun. It's actually enjoyable to play. I've half considered trying to make a set myself. I'm not certain I'm really willing to dedicate myself to learning the tools and the coding to do that. But that is one that I would like. I'd like to see the DS Dragon Quest series get achievement sets, just if nothing else, so that I can play through those games again and get achievements. Those are the main ones that I can think of off the top of my head. I'm sure if you gave me time, I could come up with a laundry list of ones, but those are the ones that I can immediately think of.
Okay. What are you the most proud of in your journey on Ori?
I'm proud of the fact that I've actually pushed myself to get this far in terms of overall. The fact that I did push far beyond what I expected that I would. And I am proud of that. I'm proud that I did push myself beyond what might otherwise seem to be my limits. And the fact that more specifically, if we're talking about specific achievement sets, I'm very proud of, well, some of the harder ones. Like I'm very proud of the Solstice achievement. That one took a lot of time, a lot of effort to get. I'm very proud of Friday the 13th. That's a game I thought I would never master. I was just proud. I was excited, I think, like a year or two ago when I finally beat it for the first time. And now that I've actually been able to essentially master it, it elated me. And of course, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, Ninja Gaiden, some of the really, really hard ones. Very proud of those as well.
So this would be my last question for my segment, Veritasu, and after that I will put you into the end of shoot for the next segment. So my last question is, do you have any rivals on Ori? People who you compete with to stay above their site rank and use that as a motivation to keep playing?
That's actually a good question. I'd say it changes depending upon who's directly above me. I think if I'm looking at somebody who I'd kind of like to get ahead of, I'd kind of like to get ahead of Sarconius. He's currently sitting at number 5, and he's somebody that I do watch on Twitch from time to time and talk to occasionally. I'd kind of like to, get past him and get above him, which would put me in the top 5, which would accomplish my other goal. Certainly to a degree, I'm in contention with Max, but Max is number 1 for a darn good reason. And, so I don't really consider him a specific rival, but possibly Sarconius would be the, if I was to name somebody, it would probably be him.
Yeah, and it is always interesting to see kind of who's ahead of you. I've definitely shared that experience of having those couple people ahead of you that are active, that you're always trying to one up or trying to, you know, catch up with, or sometimes you get, you know, 500, 1,000 points ahead and you feel like you've got a little bit of a lead. So I definitely share that experience with you a bit. I did want to kind of switch gears here a little bit and ask you a little bit more just about your gaming background in general and your thoughts on that. So what is your favorite game genre and what is your least favorite game genre?
My favorite game genre, I'm very partial to games in the Metroidvania style. I always find myself kind of attracted to those. Castlevania Symphony of the Night, the Metroid series, newer games like Bloodstained Ritual of the Night or Ori and the Blind Forest. The Metroidvania genres, it appeals to me on a very, very deep level because there's something that's exciting about exploring new places, finding roadblocks that you can't get past, and then being able to come back to those at a later point when you've got new abilities or new items that you can use to get past them. It's a similar sense of excitement and exhilaration as getting achievements themselves. Least favorite? I'm not a real big fan of fighting games. I've never been really good at them. And they can be enjoyable to watch. And certainly they can be kind of fun to play, but I'm all thumbs when it comes to it. Part of that is I have a tendency to get into routine, and as a result I tend to develop working with one particular action, usually something like the leg sweep. And as a result, I get my head handed to me on a regular basis by the computer or by somebody else. So it doesn't really appeal to me. I don't have anything against it specifically, but it just doesn't appeal to me.
Fair enough. Yeah. And fighting games definitely have their own, unique sets of challenges that can be quite frustrating. So I would definitely agree with you on that. If you could choose only one game, what would you say is your all-time favorite game?
Oh, that is a tough question. My all-time favorite game, if you put me in a corner, I would say maybe Castlevania Symphony of the Night. It's a game I have gone back to very frequently, and it's a game I fell in love with from the very first moment that I played it. And it just, even though it's a game that I have played time and time again, and I know how to get through it, I know where everything is, it's still exciting and fun to me every time I go back to it. So I'd probably go with that one.
Fair enough. And yeah, I mean, that I am pretty sure I've seen at least like 3 or 4 people run it on different Twitch streams for retro achievements. And it looks like an awesome game. It's a series that I'm kind of trying to break into. I'll probably start with like Aria of Sorrow or something like that. Do you have a favorite video game console? And if so, what is it?
My favorite video game console would probably be the Nintendo Entertainment System. It was the first game console I owned. It's the one that kind of encapsulates most of my childhood gaming, because most of what I played was on that. I got a Super NES later on, I think when I was in my teens, but a lot of my formative game playing experience was on the NES. So that one's one that I just automatically gravitate back towards.
Okay. What would you say is the most frustrating moment that you've experienced in a video game, NES or otherwise? Any system really, but...
Oh, trying to pin it down to one specific thing. I don't think I could really pin down one specific. Well, maybe I could. Maybe I could. It might just be playing through Ninja Gaiden and getting to Act 6-2. And anybody who's familiar with that game and has beaten it knows exactly what I'm talking about when I talk about the jump. There is a specific jump where you have three enemies that will constantly respawn if you're in the wrong position, that you have to get past to clear a delicate jump. And if you mess up in the timing at all, you will get knocked into a pit. And that specific jump is what kept me from being able to beat Ninja Gaiden for about 20 years. So that, well, maybe not 20 years, maybe it was only 15 years, but that jump is possibly one of the most frustrating just because of that. There are other moments that have been particularly frustrating. The last couple of levels of Ghosts and Goblins, I have gone into frothing rages at that after dying for the 47th time. But that, if I was to narrow it down and pick a specific moment that comes to mind, that would probably be it.
Yeah, it's always fun when you have that one particular jump in a specific game where it's memorable to the point where you just know this is it right here. You know, I've definitely had that that issue in a lot of games actually, with just having to deal with a really crummy platforming part of the game. So, what have you been playing outside of RA these days? Outside of retro achievements.
What I've been doing right now is I've been playing some more modern games. I've been playing through the Danganronpa series on stream only on the weekends because it's the only time I have enough dedicated time to do it. That has been really enjoyable. I absolutely adore a good murder mystery, and that series has some really good characters, some really good scenarios, and some really twisty plots that keeps me very, very interested. I've also started back playing No Man's Sky. I've gone back to that particular game first time in about a year, and I've been enjoying that as well. It's a nice thing to kind of play whenever that I just want to spend 6 hours and just kind of meander about and just piddle away. I also, especially if I've had a stressful day at work or something, I will often play American Truck Simulator. That is an excellent game to just kind of chill out to. And it makes for a relaxed, fun stream.
Yeah, and it's always nice to have a few games that you can kind of fall back on that are just more relaxed. So it's obviously fun to compete. I think all four of us definitely share that enjoyment aspect out of retro achievements. But once in a while, it's nice to kind of kick back and relax and have a game you can fall back on. So I could definitely relate to that. You talked a little bit about No Man's Sky, and that's a little bit more of a modern game. Do you own any modern gaming consoles, and how do you feel about modern gaming in general?
The most modern, unless you count the PC, the most modern gaming console I own is the Switch. I think modern gaming is still really good. There's constantly good games that are coming out. I know for myself, I've kind of backed off of modern console gaming, mostly due to the fact that apart from Nintendo, with Microsoft and with Sony, they've moved so much towards making their consoles basically computers that are dedicated for playing games, that most of the titles that I would want to play on a Microsoft console or a Sony console, I could play on my PC for usually cheaper. And I don't have to spend, you know, $500, $400, whatever, to buy an additional console. Because what I found is with recent consoles, I tend to get the console and buy a small handful of games, as opposed to with older systems where I have many, many games, you know, 20, 40, you know, games maybe for it. So I've kind of stepped away from that. Nintendo's is the outlier because most of the games I would want to play on a Nintendo console are probably going to be Nintendo-developed games, and I'm not going to see those on any other system. And also, they tend to have kind of more unique gaming experiences with their consoles as opposed to the other two. So, as a result, I do a lot of my modern gaming on my PC and occasionally on the Switch. And I've kind of been able to push away, and all of the controversies that come out about, you know, when Xbox One X came out, and I think that was the one where they tried to make it to where you couldn't trade games with people. All of that was basically background noise to me because I wasn't going to be getting it in the first place, and indeed I haven't. So that's kind of what I've done in terms of modern gaming.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. It could definitely be great, and there's some fun modern games. I mostly stick to retro, but I mean, there's a few choice titles that I would definitely be interested in if I owned a modern gaming console. So, last question I had for you, and then I'll kick it over to Bendy to talk to you a little bit more about streaming, because I know that you're pretty into that. That's where you and I have talked quite a bit. What are some of your favorite gaming memories from your childhood?
Some of my favorite gaming memories. Well, one memory, it's not a specific memory, it's more of a series of memories. One of them is... Whenever I would go grocery shopping with my mother, because we had to travel. I grew up in a very, very small town, and we would have to travel like an hour to go shopping. So when we did, we bought, you know, weeks or maybe a month's worth of food. I would have to tag along with her because at the time I was like five or something. I would have to tag along with her throughout the entire experience, which was very, very boring. But then when we would get to the end, whenever she would get to the checkout, directly across from the checkouts, there was, because this was back in the 80s, there were a couple of arcade machines. So I would go, hey, Mom, can I go over there? So I would go over there, and there was one specific game that always, always made me excited. Even though I didn't have any quarters to play with, didn't make a lick of difference, and it was Outrun. There was a stand-up Outrun cabinet that I would go to, and I don't think I ever got any quarters from Mom to play it, but it didn't matter because it had that big, big firm steering wheel. It had that nice leathery feeling shifter. It had the pedals. It had graphics that just blew my mind. And I can remember spending a cumulative probably an hour, but it seemed like hours standing there at that arcade and just playing with it like I was driving and thinking, man, what a cool game this is, how awesome this game is, how much I want to play it. And I think I probably did get some quarters every so often, and I'm sure that they lasted all of about, well, however long the time limit, the default time limit is on that game, because I wasn't a very good gamer at 5 years old. Surprise, surprise. That is a memory that I remember. I also remember very strongly the Christmas, when I was 5 years old, the Christmas that I got up and they showed me and they woke me up out of bed and I went down the hallway and I turned the corner and I looked in this room and they had gotten me the NES power set that had the multi-cart with Mario, Duck Hunt, and World Class Track Meet, the two controllers, a zapper, the power pad. They had the power pad laid out. They had the console powered on. They had the zapper hooked up. They had the controller hooked up. They had the game in there. And it blew my mind. It was like every dream I'd ever had came true all at once. I had that game console that I wanted to play, and I spent so many hours playing that alone, playing that with my dad, playing that with my cousins. That's a very, very strong memory, and one that I like to go back to sometimes to just kind of reminisce on. Other memories I have, I remember I'm going to be rambling, so please bear with me. One of my grandmothers, she had the first game console I played because she had an Atari 2600. She would let me borrow that every so often. And she had several different games that I could play, and I really enjoyed playing that Atari 2600. I played Donkey Kong, I played Asteroids, I played all sorts of all manner of games on it. And she got an NES as well, and she to this day I can't do the turtle tipping trick effectively in Super Mario Brothers, but my grandmother could pull it off flawlessly every single time. She had it down to a science. And she would, all you had to do was put the game in the console. She'd boot it up. She'd get to world, I think it's three, I think it's 3-1. And she would do the turtle tipping trick. And I just go, oh, wow. Still alive to this day. Bless her heart. I remember spending time with a lot of it's kind of more general things, spending time with my friends, playing games in college. I was known as that guy who's got the NES, and I loved hooking up my system so other people could experience playing games. I would put it in the comments so people could play it. And reminisce someone on their childhoods. Those are most of the main memories I can think of, and the strong memories. I also remember this is a kind of a broad memory. I remember when I was in school, when I was in elementary, me and my friends, we would trade games. I would have a game that I've played a lot. My friend would have a game that he played a lot, and we'd go, okay, well, here. Tomorrow I'm going to bring my game to school. You bring your game to school. We'll swap games and we'll play each other's games for a while. Then we'll swap back. I got to play Godzilla that way. I played Mike Tyson's Punch Out that way. A lot of good memories, a lot of childhood memories, especially, but, those are the main ones that come to mind when I think about, gaming memories.
Well, thank you for sharing those stories. I think that when talking about our childhoods with gaming, there really are all these little moments that evoke such strong emotions, right? While listening to you speak, especially the part about that feeling of opening a new console on Christmas Day, I think that we've all been there, and it's just difficult to understate what an overwhelmingly incredible feeling that is when you're a kid and you've wanted this so badly. There's nothing you want more, and you just feel like, my entire life has changed now. This is incredible. So thank you for sharing those stories. At this point, I would like to change gears a little bit and focus more on Twitch and your streaming background. So to get us started here, I would like to ask you, how did you first get started streaming on Twitch?
Well, I started streaming. I don't even remember how long ago it was that I started streaming. It's been at least a good 5 years, 5-6 years maybe. I do remember how I got started. I was hanging out with a friend of mine who, and I said, hey, maybe we should, because I'd been wanting to do for a long time, I'd been wanting to do some sort of broadcast media of some sort. I'd tried my hand at doing YouTube in the style of the Let's Plays that I saw with not all that great of success. I didn't really know what I was doing. Was just basically trying to copy other people without really knowing, you know, how they did it, like anybody does whenever they first start out. And I tried that for a little while and didn't really work that well for me. So my friend and I said, well, why don't we start doing some Twitch? Cause I'd seen some people, I think Twitch came to my, recognition with, Twitch Plays Pokemon. And, I said, hey, this is something I can try doing. So I set up a time, a specific date. I think it was New Year's or something. I think it was New Year's, where I was going to go over to my friend's house. I was going to bring my NES console and my 6 Mega Man games for it. And I was going to play through all 6 Mega Man games and I was going to stream it. So we got the setup. It was a very convoluted setup with all sorts of wires and adapters and last minute headphone swaps. And I started streaming, and as is not really a surprise, nobody showed up. Now, I don't think we had a single viewer for the entire first, that entire night. And then the next morning, I continued to play through the Mega Man series. And again, I didn't have anybody. Eventually, we decided to switch to playing Skyrim a little bit. And we finally got somebody, Phil, the first person who ever, I think, watched my stream. He followed me. He showed up. We talked a bit. I kept plugging away at it. Yeah, for a while I was doing it specifically with real hardware and all the technical problems that come with that. Eventually I just started moving towards emulation because it was much, much easier for me to get it set up and to get it to stream. I didn't require hooking up 1,001 cables, and I've been doing it ever since.
Nice. What a great story. I feel like you've come so far since then. One thing I wanted to ask you about is this character you have in your Twitch avatar, and I believe you have an emote of him as well, this little pixelated character. I think he's from an NES game. Who is this guy? What's he from, and why have you chosen him as sort of your online persona?
I don't know if he's even got a name. He is from the NES title Treasure Master, which was a game that I got on one of my birthdays, my aunt got me a copy of Super Mario Brothers 2, and rather impolitely, I could be kind of a jerk at times. I think when I was like 10, I told her, I already have this. I took it and I carried it to Walmart, I remember, and I could trade it in for something of the equivalent value. And I remember I had it basically of their selection that I could get for that price. I had a choice between Kiwi Craze and Treasure Master, and Treasure Master looked really awesome. And I'm like, I want that one. So I got it and I played it, and I wasn't very good at it because the game is very, very difficult. Somewhat unfairly so. But it was a game that is kind of stuck with me throughout, partly because part of it is it has a really, really great opening theme that is basically the Starsky and Hutch theme. But it is really, really good. And it is so, so early 90s. It almost hurts. And there's something about the simplicity and the iconicness of the 90s of that particular character with his pastel colored shirt, his bright neon green hat, and just that smirk of, I'm going to go do it, that appealed to me. And I decided I'm going to adopt this as my avatar. and ironically, that particular avatar has probably brought me more recognition than almost any of my actual gaming. Funnily enough, due to the fact that a popular streamer, Late Night Retro, it drives him insane. It drove him insane whenever that I would post that emoticon. So people would start following me and subscribing to me so they could get the emoticon so they could bug him. And I think I've probably gotten more audience from that single decision probably than anything else. But that's where that comes from. That is, like I said, I'd have to find the manual for Treasure Master to find out if he's actually got a name. But for us, he's Hat Boy, spelled B-O-H-A-T-B-O-I.
I love it. Yeah, that's one of the funny things about Twitch. You really never know what's going to really resonate and connect with people. Sometimes it's something as silly as that. But I really love the idea of when a video game just perfectly captures an era, a time period. And I do have a soft spot for the NES, so I'll probably have to look into Treasure Master. That sounds like a pretty cool one. One thing I wanted to ask you is, it could be difficult on Twitch to really stand out from the crowd, find your niche, find what makes you unique. So I wanted to ask you, what do you feel makes your stream unique?
Well, to be perfectly honest, that's something that I have struggled with and still struggle with. Twitch is a very crowded marketplace. It's a very popular place for people. And the retro community is thriving on Twitch. There are countless people who stream retro. There is a very great community there. But as a side effect of that, as you said, it's very, very difficult to stand out. I've tried various things to kind of draw people in with things that they might not get otherwise. I've temporarily paused, but I'm going to be resuming it very, very soon. The Nintendo Power Hour, where I take, or hours technically, where I systematically go through the issues of Nintendo Power, kind of poring over them, looking at them, seeing how they presented games, what kind of games were shown, and then playing the games that were presented. And to me, it's a very fun experience, but it's also... It's also a lot more time consuming in terms of preparation compared to a regular stream. So it's very easy for me to kind of go, I don't really want to do a Power Hours this week, but I'm going to try to force myself to get back into that because I know that while I have a very small audience, the people who do show up are enthusiastic and they enjoy it. So I want to give that back. I want to continue to give that to them. But standing out it's very, very difficult. And I know a lot of people gravitate towards speedrunners because they like seeing people who are very good at their games. Because I don't focus specifically on a specific game or games like they do, I think that possibly makes it a little bit more difficult for me to stand out as a result of that because, you may like whenever I'm playing, game X, but I'm probably only going to play X for, part of the stream and then I'm going to move on to another game. which you may not find interesting. So I don't know if I've really got any solid advice. If you can do something creative that is that you can't get anywhere else, if you can create value that is unique to you, that is probably the way to separate yourself out from the pack. But that is a very, very difficult thing in a crowded market. And I beyond that, I don't really have any specific advice.
Honestly, though, I think you make a really good point. Finding these little things that we could latch onto to make our streams unique or stand apart. I mean, I know that for me, the kinds of streams I watch and what I enjoy the most is they usually have some sort of little gimmick or twist where I do mostly watch retro, but they're not just playing retro games. They have that little something special. So I think you have the right idea, Veritasu. I really think you do. Another thing I wanted to ask you is, in general, how do you decide which games to stream?
It is... I am very fickle, I think might be the best way of describing me, because it's what... it's usually, it's whatever piques my interest at that specific moment. I know that there are many times when I sit down and I'm looking at the clock and I'm going, it's about time for me to start my stream. What do I want to play? And I just kind of sit there and blank out and go, I don't know what I want to play. I find a lot of times I'm just flipping through my games and going, that one looks interesting, or that one, or I haven't played this one in, I don't know, 2 days, so I'm going to play that. I know because I do retro achievements, if there's something new on retro achievements that looks interesting and I want to play, then I'll probably do that. Or if there's a game that looks that I'm not at all familiar with but looks kind of interesting, I might try that. But I frequently... apart from the weekends where I tend to be a little bit more settled because that's when I do a lot of my modern stuff. It's just whatever, kind of whatever just piques my interest at that specific moment. Just maybe it's because I had tacos for lunch and suddenly I decide I want to play through Mega Man 3 for the 47th time. Yeah. Whatever jumps out at me.
Yeah, that definitely makes sense. Flipping the question a little bit, I want you to reflect upon your streaming experience and what games you've played that audiences have really connected with. Do you feel like there are certain types of games that really make for the best streams?
Yeah, I do think there are certain ones that really do make for the best streams. I know that whenever I played through the Phoenix Wright series, which I didn't get all the way through it, unfortunately, the audience really resonated with that at the time. It's been many years, but they really showed an interest in it. They were engaged. The Danganronpa series that I'm playing through, my regular audience is very invested in the characters and the story and trying to solve the mystery and think things out. My experience has been the best in terms of audience engagement. It's been what's been games where the audience, where it feels like the audience is not just a casual spectator, but actively involved in some way. Because they're trying to solve a mystery or because they're following along with a particularly engaging story. And those I've found have been some of the most popular in terms of audience engagement. Because I feel like if you're a viewer and if you're just a passive viewer, there's a strong tendency to background a stream. I know that I'm very guilty of this myself, where you set the stream, you're watching it, you're showing your support by being there, but you're not actively kind of paying attention to it. It's background noise. But ones where there is that element of audience engagement, where they feel like they're actively taking a role in it, or that they can actively take a role in it, those tend to be ones that become less background and more active, from my experience.
I think you make a good point about story-driven games. Thinking about the Twitch dynamics and streaming to an audience, you basically have two categories of people, right? The people who have played the game and the people who haven't played the game. For the people who haven't played the game, they could really get invested in the story and the mysteries and all of that. And then even for the people who have played the game, it's still a lot of fun to watch because it's fun to see your reactions and hear your theories to all the plot twists and turns and all of that. Ace Attorney and Danganronpa are two of my personal favorites, so that's awesome to see that you've been getting into those as well. One other thing I wanted to ask, what is your favorite moment that has happened during one of your streams? Maybe something really funny happened, or maybe there was a really hype moment when you beat a hard game. Are there any really favorite standout moments that come to mind for you?
Well, I know that I've had those moments where any moment where I, for the first time, managed to accomplish something that I have tried for a long time to do, and I've been able to accomplish it with other people present, so it's been a shared experience. Those have been probably some of the best moments for me. One that immediately comes to mind is whenever that I, this was like a month or two ago. There is a game that I have played since my childhood that I have played countless times, and it has stuck with me throughout the entire time. I played it whenever I was a kid. I played it whenever I was a teen. I played it whenever I was in college. I played it during that period where I was trying to put videos out on YouTube. It was one of the first ones I think I did in terms of trying to beat it, that I have done on Twitch, that I have done with Retro Achievements. And the moment where, for the first time in my life, I managed to beat The Adventures of Bayou Billy, the North American version, I nearly cried. I was so happy. I was almost in tears with joy. Not only that I had finally done it, because I've had that experience with other games, Castlevania, Ninja Gaiden, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles games that I have struggled with for years and years and years and years, over decades. But that one, because it was my white whale, because it was that game that I wanted to get to where that I could beat, and I not only beat it, I beat it surprisingly, and I beat it with friends, because I count my regulars as kind of, it's an asymmetrical relationship, and I recognize that, but the people who regularly come to my stream, I kind of consider kind of at least pals online. The fact that I could do that with them was just overwhelming. That's probably one of those moments that really stands out to me with streaming. Other ones being the first time I had anybody show up, anytime that I've had a lot of people show up, but that one, Because that, to me, is one of those wonderful moments of gaming. Whenever that you are sharing that one-in-a-lifetime experience together and you can celebrate together. That is probably the moment that I would point to.
I could hear the enthusiasm in your voice as you speak, and I could just tell what a powerful, incredible moment that must have been. Video games really always are more fun with friends, and I'm glad that you were able to share that experience with your Twitch audience. That sounds truly incredible. You touched upon this a little bit earlier, but I want to dive a little bit deeper into this idea. What do you feel like you've learned during your time as a streamer?
Well, one of the things that I've learned is the importance of perseverance, because especially in the early days, I would do entire streams and never have a soul appear, where I would literally be broadcasting into the void. And it's disheartening to do that. And there is a strong temptation to just say, well, I'm not succeeding, I'm not doing well, I should just fold up, you know, and just, because putting yourself out there is tiring. It is, there's a certain drain that goes with that, just by nature of the experience. So there's always the temptation to just say, well, I should just, you know, pack it up and just focus, just not even bother. But I've learned, and it's not that I didn't know it, but it has reinforced it for me, that keeping at it, persevering, and constantly putting it out there is important. In that, even if you don't have big success, because in terms of streaming, I'm not a success. I don't mean to say that in terms of putting myself down or anything, but I'm stating it more as a simple, you know, a simple truth. My streams usually have at most maybe 5-7 people, which is not actually all that bad. But when you're looking at people who you look up to, when you look at people who, you know, the bigger streamers like Nico or like or Late Night Retro or any of the others who garner big audiences, even just, you know, regularly getting double digit audiences, it can be disheartening. But I've learned that it's not about how many people that you do it for. It's about the people who are there, the people who show up regularly, the people who are regularly popping in. Maybe they're just saying hi and then just kind of chilling in the background and lurking. Maybe they're ones that constantly interact. I only have a couple that regularly interact with me. But I look at my viewers and I see certain names that appear repeatedly who I know aren't bots. Bots are really annoying, but you do it for yourself and you do it for them, because that's how I see it. I see it has taught me the importance of pushing myself to do better for them, for others, for the people who I broadcast for, because it's important to them, it's important to me. And I've kind of wandered afield from the actual question, admittedly, but that is an important lesson that it has taught me, because there's a strong temptation to just give up if I'm not seeing success with something. if I'm not seeing any kind of forward motion. But streaming has taught me to keep doing it regardless, to keep pushing. If it's something that I actually want to just keep doing. And that is probably the biggest and most important lesson that I have learned from Twitch.
Well said. That's amazing that you've learned that about yourself. And I feel like you had some really good advice in there as well for people who might be newer to Twitch or looking into Twitch. So hopefully people listening to this can really pick something up from what you've said today. At this point, I would like to throw things over to Shoot, who will be keeping the train rolling with a few final questions to wrap up today's podcast.
Of course. Thank you, Bendy. And thank you for sharing a little bit about your experience on Twitch with us. It's pretty heartwarming, actually, to hear kind of you continuing to build your stream. It's always fun to pop in and see what you're playing. We will include a link to Veritasu's Twitch information in the description so that you can throw him a follow and check him out when he's live. So just some general questions to get to know you a little bit better. How did you come up with the name Veritasu?
Well, that is, I came up with the name whenever the name originally came up, whenever that I was trying to come up with a username for Twitter. This was back when I was in law school. And I was trying to figure out, cause I think the username that I had been using at the time was taken. So I thought, okay, let me craft a new one. And I've always been, the nature of my being is one where I value truth very, very, very strongly. Whenever that was in, I'm wandering afield for a moment, but whenever I was in Japanese calligraphy class, the calligraphy that I did was of truth. I've got it hanging on my wall, actually. But truth is very important to me, and I've always liked the concept of truth, but also the Latin word for truth, veritas. I've always thought it's a good word for the concept, and it also sounds really nice. So I thought, okay, well, why don't I take that and take my love of, you know, Japanese culture and kind of mush them together. So I took veritas and I kind of tweaked it with a slightly kind of how you might would say it if you were saying it in Japanese. Of course, it wouldn't be with a V, it would be with a B, but veritasu. So I said, okay, I'll do veritasu. And I did that. And I've started using it at that point. And whenever that I started doing Twitch, I decided to use it there too. And that's been the case. And I've really been glad that that's what I went with because I really like it.
Yeah, this is a pretty unique name, and it's always cool to see how people come up with their names. So that's something we always do like to ask. Do you have any favorite hobbies outside of gaming?
Yeah, I like watching movies. I don't do it as often as I might would, because my nature is it's very difficult for me to split my focus. I pretty much have to focus on one thing and I have to, everything else has to just be background. So if I put in a movie, I can't half watch the movie. I'm probably going to be actively watching the movie to the detriment of whatever else I'm doing. So I don't watch movies the way I would, but I enjoy watching movies and I like learning movies, possibly even more than that. I watch a lot of YouTube videos about and listen to a lot of podcasts about movies, classic movies, but also, you know, maybe schlocky movies. I'm a big fan, because I grew up in that era, of the 80s. The 80s was a really good decade, in my opinion, for movies that I really, really enjoy watching. And also the early 90s, because I grew up during that time, too. I really enjoy learning about these movies, reading about these movies, watching these movies. And of course, My favorite thing, sharing those movies with new audiences. That's probably one of my favorite things to do. I had a friend who lived nearby who I would, every Friday night, I would carry a selection of movies with me. And I would say, all right, we're going to watch a movie. Which movie you want to watch? And it would be movies that, you know, because movies that I've seen, I want to share. I want other people to experience that too. To me, and that's kind of my other major hobby is just movies, especially, you know, I like horror movies. I like sci-fi movies. But especially movies from the era that I was forming who I was, are really, really, really special to me.
Yeah, no, I think we've talked a little bit. I think it was on my stream a while ago, just about, you and I having kind of a shared interest in film. A lot of people that play on Retro Achievements, that's mostly what they focus their activity on outside of their personal life a lot of the time. So it's cool that we have kind of a shared interest in films, particularly films that are in the 80s to 90s, because that is a big part of what I watched growing up. And we did talk a lot about horror, and with Halloween coming up for horror movies, I was going to ask you, since we didn't really get into the specifics of it, but what would you say are your favorite horror movies? Maybe top 5 or top 10, something like that?
My favorite, in no particular order, because that would be like asking me to pick one child I love more than the other. I don't have any kids, but that's what it would be like. Anyway, my favorite, well, my absolute all-time number one, almost without a doubt, is probably one of my favorite films of all time, is 1982's John Carpenter's The Thing. That is probably my all-time absolute favorite movie, period. I have watched it countless times. I can watch it countless times. It has everything that I would want in a horror movie. It's the cast, the setting, the dialogue, the effects, everything is just pitch perfect. And the atmosphere that it gives, that tense paranoia, is exhilarating. And I absolutely love it. And I love sharing it with people who have not experienced it. Other favorites of mine, I'm a fan of the original 1950s and the 1970s remakes of Invasion of the Body Snatcher. Much like with The Thing, good examples of remakes that can actually work. You know, both of them stand up very, very strongly, in my opinion. But it's fascinating to me because it's a similar story. It's the same story, but told in completely different environments with different themes going on. And the fact that particular story has been retold approximately once every 20 years since the original, the original movie, but the original novella, technically. I think that says something to its effect. Other favorites, horror movies, Alien, of course, very, very good. I would also possibly put Aliens. Aliens is a bit more action-y, but also very, very, very good. I like The Exorcist very much, although, again, much like with Aliens, I don't actually see The Exorcist as a horror film necessarily. I see it as a drama, a very, very strong drama with horrific elements in it. I'm partial to the 2000s remake or late 90s, I forget, remake of The House on Haunted Hill. I think that was a remake that actually was really good and possibly even better than the original. Beyond that, there are other ones, but I would have a hard time necessarily saying this one or that one would. Oh, Jaws. If we're counting it as a horror film, Jaws. I love Jaws. Jaws is a classic for very, very good reasons. Yeah, I could probably rattle off a list of 25, but I don't want to belabor that particular point. But those are some of the ones that immediately bubble up to the surface for me.
No worries. And yeah, no, that's a good list. I was just kind of curious because I would definitely love to, outside of the podcast sometime, like maybe swap lists of specific ones to see if I haven't seen one that you've seen and vice versa. And I'm also a big John Carpenter fan as well. I think probably, you know, Vampires and They Live, I think, is probably my favorite from 1988. That movie is just fantastic. Like, it's just so well done and tasteful for the time, especially. So couple last questions for you. Do you practice any kind of sports?
No, I've never really been a sports guy. I've played baseball. Excuse me. I played t-ball for a year. Or no, I played t-ball for a year, and I played regular baseball for a year whenever I was growing up. But I quickly ducked out of that because I didn't like how much time it ate up in terms of traveling and whatnot. I hated having to travel. I played basketball when I was in high school, but since then, no, not really. It's not a particular point of interest to me. I wouldn't mind necessarily having a sport that I enjoyed playing, but nothing has really struck itself out at me. Maybe I should take up golf again. I don't know. Get some sun. But no, I don't have any particular sports that I play.
No worries. And yeah, golf is kind of, it's been quite a long time since I got involved in sports as well, but golf is always kind of a relaxing, especially like mini putts, not real serious or anything like that. Just fun to go out with friends and do that. So last question I have for you, and then I will give you a breather and kick it back over to Draco to wrap things up. Tell us a fun fact about yourself. So this could be anything, something that people might not necessarily expect from you.
Fun fact about myself. Your definition of fun, your mileage on fun may vary. I spent, whenever I was in college, I spent a year studying abroad in Japan. That's probably one of the more interesting facts that I could summon up. I also briefly went to law school. I didn't graduate law school, but I went there. I can't think of anything specific to like my being that is particularly would make for an interesting fact. My tongue is connected a little bit too far up, so it presents a few challenges. Apart from that, that's all I can really think of.
Well, thanks for that, and thanks for Shoot and Bendy for those awesome segments. Before we end today's episode, I would like to thank you, Veritasu, for taking the time to be with us today. You have been a fantastic guest, and I think people are going to really enjoy this episode. Do you have any final comments that you would like to share?
A few final comments. Well, first of all, I want to thank you, gentlemen, again, for allowing me to come and be a guest on your stream or on your podcast. I think what you're doing here is really great. I think that what your efforts have shown real growth. You're very professional, and I really do wish you the best in this endeavor. I think it's a really great thing that you're doing. To anybody who's listening, who's doing retro achievements, just the important thing about retro achievements is it's a playground. It's a place where you can play how you want to play, and you set your own rules for how you're playing. I mean, apart from the guidelines that they set up, but the way that you approach it is up to you. You want to do badges, do badges. You want to do points, you do points. You just want to get achievements for the games that you already play, do that. For people who are streaming, don't give up. You know, the hard times are hard. It can be very dispiriting, but even if you never achieve great success, if you can find people who are with you, who enjoy what you are doing, focus on that, and that can make it worthwhile. But above all else, do it for you. And above all else, be good people. I guess that's all I've got to say.
Well, thank you very much, Ritasu, and thanks you to all to the listener who listen to the podcast in general. We cannot do this show without you all. The best way to be notified of new episode of our podcast is to subscribe to the new YouTube channel we have and click the bell icons to make sure to not miss anything. That's all for today's episode of our podcast. But we look forward to seeing you back with us again soon. On that note, bye guys.